How you doing today, Jerry?
Repair, Walt. Just got back from my doctor's checkup. Had blood work done, so we'll see how it turns out. I hope everything's okay. How you doing, young man?
I'm good. My patients are wearing thin. I bought a FT950 from a friend of mine that caused the Ole Miss net, and it was supposed to have been here at 10:40 this morning, according to UPS, and then I got another text message saying it would be here at 3:40. And it's 3:42, and I do not see a UPS truck.
I was expecting something. It's been a couple weeks ago. I was expecting something. He used to get it about 3 o'clock, but he didn't show up till, gosh, it was dark, I guess, before he showed up. Before the time changed, they were several hours behind, at least what they normally run anyway, I should say.
They allow them on this street up here where I'm at. I bet I've seen 7 or 8 FedEx trucks in and out of here today.
FedEx is just set up a little differently. I think I don't know whether it still remains true or not, but at one time I think those guys, they either had their, bought their own routes or something. I'm not sure how, or some of them did. I'm not sure how that works. But, the UPS made a decision several years ago. They only make right turns. Now they have to turn 6 ways from Sunday to make a right turn into a neighborhood. I've even seen the guy head down here in one direction, turn it in, the bottom turn around and deliver it on the way back out. So, we got a little place there we can back in and turn around. He turned around and headed back the other direction so he can make a right turn. I guess they keep an eye on him. But, they have a good idea where they're at all the time. I use that UPS tracker thing, and it tells you where they are in the neighborhood when they're close or not. But it shows that truck goes all over the place between the time it leaves the facility here in Anderson before it gets here.
All of them hate to deliver on this road. The name of it is Narrow Circle. And there's not too many places on this road that 2 cars can pass. 1 car is always going to have to back up and back into somebody else's drive to let the other car by.
That's the way it is here. This neighborhood subdivision has been here since the 60s, and the roads have never been very wide. But 2 cars can get by, but like a car and a UPS truck or a school bus, you about have to get off the road and let the school bus come by. Same thing with the garbage trucks. But we used to not have any young kids in this neighborhood. We had them for years, and they all grew up, and now we got another batch now because I got 2 school buses coming by in the afternoons. And one of them in the morning, it runs, it comes through about 6:30 in the morning. I said, good Lord. I said, man, I'd hate to have to get my kid up at 6:30 in the morning, get them off to school to get there by 8 o'clock or 8:30, whenever they start nowadays.
Then here, I don't know, about 5 weeks ago. And come to think of it, Jerry, I haven't seen a school bus on this road. And I know that kids live in the neighborhood here on the lake. They must have to walk all the way around this circle to one end or the other to catch the school bus. Right below my house, the road, it'll bear off to the right for about, I don't know, 400 feet down there. It dead ends right into the lake. And then you have, but where it bears off, you have to make a sharp, sharp left-hand turn. And there ain't no way a school bus could make that turn.
K4OIM, N4DJC. Walt, you know, the bus up here, I'm right here on this subdivision just off Brown Road, which is kind of a main road coming into Anderson from Highway 81. And there used to be, the bus used to stop up here on the corner, where the subdivision starts. And it used to stop there one time. Kids used to get on and off there, but then there was usually a passel of them out there. But like I said, my knowledge, there's some real young kids in the neighborhood now, not school age, but I think there's a couple. There's a little girl down here at the end of the road. I think she's about my granddaughter's age. I think she's probably 11 or 12 or so. And there must have been another one on the other side over there, too, because, like I said, there's two different school buses. Highway one's going to a middle school, an elementary school, or how they do that. But there's probably more than that in the neighborhood now. I don't go around the neighborhood. We got a couple of, I call them mounties, that go around on the golf carts and check everything out. Once a day, I get the scoop from them on what's going on. But I don't think we've got that many smaller, younger children in the neighborhood anymore. Maybe they're either real little or they are, past school age.
You're waiting on the UPS driver and looking for me a desktop computer. I'm a member of that Ole Miss net, and they use a net logger to log in, and my desktop, I downloaded a update to Windows 10, and after I did that, the cursor quit working, and I've been on YouTube and with Dale, and they can't, everything they tell me to do, it don't work. And I've got a brand new laptop here, but NetLogger will not let you download their software onto any portable device. It's got to be a disk. It's a laptop, or I can't use my smartphone. They say it's for security reasons.
I've heard of that software, but I've never seen it. I never used it. That's kind of weird there. I don't understand why they would be worried about it. I guess they think you're going to leave it somewhere and somebody's going to steal the code. I don't have any idea, though. That don't make a whole lot of sense to me. But I don't have a desktop. I got a couple of laptops I use. And I got one MacBook Pro I run Windows on, but I just use it for some of my radio programming programs and scanner programming. But otherwise, I don't use Windows at all. And I don't really have to use it, but I can use the Mac OS for a lot of things. As long as radio uses an SD card, I can use it to upload a CVS, CSV file or whatever that thing is. I can load a file on it and load my repeaters and that sort of stuff into it. But I got one program I use for my unit and scanners, and it only works on Windows. So you got to use it for that. I hate, like I said, I don't like Windows. I hadn't liked it in years, and I had to buy it to use it on my radios.
That Ole Miss net, I guess, 4 years ago, and I thought it was something to do with Mississippi or either Ole Miss University down there, and I didn't find out the last night what Ole Miss stood for. It's Ole Men's International Single Sideband.
Never guessed that myself either. I would have thought when they say Ole Miss, the only thing I remember is Ole Miss, Ole Miss football. That's the only thing I associate Ole Miss with, but makes sense now, I guess. But I didn't know that either. I don't get on HF and hadn't been on in years, but makes sense now, I guess. But I would have never guessed it from the name of it, though.
And that radio would get in here today where I can get my antennas and everything hooked up. They having that, I ain't no contester, but Owen's having that big deal this weekend, and I'd heard Tom M4TR on here talking about it, and I was going to see if I could work a couple of stations in Poland tomorrow. But I've got to have a HF radio. I sold Steve over here my FT450 a couple of days ago. That thing was just too complicated for me, Jerry.
Happened to that thing, I didn't realize you sold it. But, what you got? You say you got a 950 coming in? Is that what it is?
I'm getting it from. He calls the Ole Miss net on Friday night, and he bought the radio new, and I forgot what he told me he bought to replace the 950, but I know what he bought. He said was a little over $4,500, and he'd been waiting on it 3 months on back order.
You know, tell me what that is. That sounds like one of those, some of those Kenwoods is at least that much, and I don't know if the AC is that expensive. No, there's several radios that expensive. That's way out of my league.
I was looking on eBay. I've been looking on there for a couple of months for another radio. And the other week when I checked into the net, he told me, he said, well, Walt, if my new one gets here, I thought about putting this on the QRZ. But if you're interested, I'll give you a good price on it. And they told me what he wanted. And I looked on eBay this morning. And that radio on eBay is still selling for $1,495.
You probably got a good deal on it then. See, a lot of these radios are getting hard, and have been hard to get. I saw the other day where Kenwood, you know, they don't have any. They discontinued both the dual band handhelds back in December. Now they got that D-74A, that tri-bander that's got APRS and all the other stuff on it. That radio has been selling for about $500. Now they Ham Radio Outlet's got it showing it back in stock now. Kenwood must have made a short run of them. That thing is $729. I mean, you could have blown me over with a feather. There ain't no way in the world I'd pay that kind of money for a handheld. $400 or $500 is a lot of money, but over $700.
Fine. They say the reason that they're back ordering everything is all the cargo ships are tied up off the beach out there in California. They can't get in and get unloaded on account of the COVID. MFJ, you call down there, they won't even answer the phone. They can't get no parts in to repair none of the equipment that people sent back, and can't get nothing to replace it with. Everything's sitting out there on the cargo ships.
Jay-Z's out of a lot of their stuff, has been. And the same thing with ICOM. Several ICOM radios are out of stock right now and have been, but they're trickling back in now. ICOM's got that 52A they announced back last year, and I got on the pre-order reservation list at DX Engineering for that back in October. And they ran out of parts because they had that factory fire at that AKM. A semiconductor factory there in Japan. It burned up back in October, and I read the other day where they just started shipping them in Japan again in late February, early March. And I talked to a guy the other day that said that HRO said that there might be somebody at HRO said they might be in sometime mid-April. And the SEC website, the type acceptance part of it has got it set up for sometime early next week where they're going to have the user manual up and the external photos. It's already been, it was approved back in December, but they have to send another radio back into them, I think, Walt, where they can take photos with the right and correct type acceptance plate on the inside of the radio. And if that's the case, that means they may be shipping them here to the U.S., but like I said, if they stuck on a dock somewhere out on a container ship, ain't no telling when they'll be here.
Got that ship freed out there in the Suez Canal yet? K4OIM for ID.
Freed up the other day, I think. It's out, headed out of the canal now, I think. They were talking about we have a shortage of toilet paper. They didn't get it unstuck or something. I thought that was funny. People be making runs on toilet paper again and be buying everything you can find. But they freed it up. Might have been Tuesday. It was either Tuesday or Wednesday, I think. They got it going again.
Captain, well, I don't think they call him a captain. They're a pilot now. I bet they'll hang his butt.
Married a guy, it's been years ago, she passed away. Matter of fact, I think she still lives. As a matter of fact, but her husband died 14, 15 years ago, I guess, and he had been in the Army. He'd been a pilot in the Army Air Corps, been in the Army. He'd been in the Air Force, too, and he had this long history of military history, and he was one of these guys. He'd been a Navy captain. He was a captain of the SS the USS Derrick, which is a missile cruiser, I think, back in the 60s or early 70s. But he was piloting those liquid natural gas ships from down into Indonesia, and he said, man, they wouldn't let just anybody, they wouldn't put anybody over one of those things. And he said, I mean, tons of liquid gas on there. He said, you hit one spark, he said, you don't have to worry about picking up anything, okay? There'll be nothing left.
Oh, I talked to a guy Tuesday or Wednesday. I forget his call. It's PP5 something the other. But he was down in South America. And he said he traveled the whole continent in a fuel tanker truck. He called it a mobile service station. He said they stopped somebody, pass them on the road and flag them down. They would stop and fill their trucks up or their vehicles. But he said that's a pretty dangerous job down there in South America on account of the drug lords.
So, I mean, I've seen some of those roads down there they travel on. It ain't safe to travel on the roads with the drug lords that after you or not. But it makes sense that, I mean, you got a lot of those places, they don't have any place to get fuel, I suppose. One of my buddies was in the oil business. He was a petroleum engineer of some type. Now, they worked in Venezuela years ago, and he said, Chavez was so powerful. And he said, you ride down the road, and they go to work at some refinery down there. You go down the road, you would see nothing but military vehicles on the road. There'd be nothing else on the highway. Beautiful highway heading to the refinery, nothing but oil trucks and military vehicles. And he said, that refinery, he said, that thing had a wall around it. They had machine gun nests all across the top of it. But I asked him, I said, he said, he didn't enjoy it. He said, they keep your passport until they got done with it. They give your passport back. He said, you had to be careful. He said, they didn't like what you did. He said, they'd lose that passport. And he said, then they'd lose you, too.
I wonder if so many of them's trying to get across the border down there in Mexico.
I've seen it. Well, one of my buddies used to go to Mexico City a lot. And they said, it wasn't nothing but cardboard houses and stuff like that. It's awful, the conditions they live in down there. But I have to tell you a quick story about about a mill I used to call them years ago, but they built a mill down there in Mexico, Denham Mill, Cone Denham did. And they built a real modern denim mill down there, and we'll pay the people 50 cents an hour, I think is what it was, something like that. But that was more they'd make in a week. I saw pictures of it, what it taken in a helicopter. Had this beautiful parking lot, and it had about half a dozen cars in it. And I said, well, y'all shut down? He said, no. He said, they built this thing not realizing people don't drive cars down here. They either ride donkeys in or walk or ride a bus in. He was telling me they had to feed, in order to get people work, they'd have to feed them and the families at the cafeteria inside the mill, and that the local government there would if they didn't bribe them, the local government cut the power off for 3 or 4 days, and would cut the power back on when they gave whatever the payoff was, and then they paid the people down there, didn't trust the banks, so they wanted to pay them in cash. And they had these little machines inside, like a teller machine inside the plant there. They give them the money in cash, and all of them get on this bus, and then the bandits would rob them. They knew they all were on one bus and knew when to pay they was, and they'd rob all of them, haul them all off the bus and steal all the money as soon as they got outside the plant, maybe a mile or two. I said, I think it's shut down now. They might let the Mexican government have it, but it was the biggest mess I'd ever heard of in my life. He said, it ain't worth going outside. Some places ain't worth doing. You know, they thought they was going to save money by moving down there, and they lost their butts on it.
Remember when I was stationed out at the Pacific Missile Range out at Port Magoo, California. Me and a couple of buddies went down to Tijuana, and people would buy a vehicle, and at the outside the main gate, once they got shipped out, if they couldn't sell that vehicle, they'd just leave it there with the keys in it. And if you were wanting to go somewhere, and you just walk out the gate there at the base and look in the parking lot for something with a key in it, and you get and drive it. And we got down to the border a couple of miles before we got there. This car we was driving had dual exhausts on it. Well, the guy that was driving, he knew the car, and when we got right before we got to the border, he said, everybody count your money, give it to me. And he got all the money and rolled it up and put a rubber band around it, got out of the car, and one of it had dual exhaust, we thought, but one of them was a dummy load pipe. And he put our money in there, and we thought he was crazy. But once we got to Tijuana, they could be four of you walking down the street, and you look around and they wouldn't be but three or maybe two of you. That was the worst town I ever been. I couldn't wait to get out of Tijuana.
That place has always been like that. I know my daddy was stationed down in San Antonio before he went to India back in 1942, I guess. And they went down there a few times. He said he went down there one time. He used to go down at watch a bullfight somewhere down there on the Texas side of the Texas border. But he said, man, he told me he went down there a few times, and just for the novelty of it. He said, well, we never went back again. He said, I ain't lost a thing down there.
I quit cigarettes, and I'm sitting here waiting on this radio, and I keep reaching over there and want to get one, but I'm fighting it off.
Thing to do. But once you get off of them, you feel a lot better. You breathe easier, that's for sure. Won't get sick as much either. I know my daddy finally quit when he was in his 60s, I guess, but he didn't pass away until he was 87. He had nothing to do with his lungs, though, but it ain't good for you, I know that. But there was a, we had two guys when I used to work at a, I worked for a company down in Sherrill, South Carolina called Highland Industries, and they made, they were owned by, they were actually owned by a Takata company, people make airbags. And we had, when I was down there, we had two of our salesmen were down in Mexico, some plant down there they were visiting. They got kidnapped down there and held for ransom. And those guys got back. They said, we ain't never leaving the United States again. They wanted me to go down there. I said, nope. No, thank you. I ain't going down there. I can see me being kidnapped. Found that. I said, they just leave me. They wouldn't go. Nobody paid a ransom for me, I don't think.
Daughters, well, I guess you can call him ex-boyfriend now, but they still friends. He worked for this company down there in Lawrence that printed postage stamps. Well, he was the purchasing officer for them. Bought all the printing equipment. And they closed that plant down about 4 years ago. And they sent him to their headquarters. And their headquarters was in Mexico. And he came back to Asheville. He was buying a place in Asheville. He had been back up there about 4 months, and I thought he had done closing on the house he was buying. But my daughter said he packed up and went back to Michigan. That's where his mom and dad lives. And in the summertime, he lives up there on, I don't know which lake it is up there, but he lives up there on one of the Great Lakes in a houseboat during the summer months. But he'll take off and go to Sweden or Switzerland or somewhere for maybe 3 or 4 weeks and come back here for a month or two, and then they send him out again. He travels all over the world.
Well, my brother-in-law does that, or he did. He works for, he works at Georgia Tech, and he works for the Department of Defense. He does work for them, too. And he used to work for Bell Labs and Lucent Technologies and, you know, a lot of several high-tech companies over the years. He travels to, he used to travel to China a good bit, and, but he didn't, he hadn't traveled since last year, I think. Seemed like last March or so, or April. He almost thought he got stuck over there. He was in Italy doing something. He was actually in Switzerland and was going to visit some friend of his in Italy, and he almost got stuck in Italy. But he got back, and that was when all that COVID was going on in Italy. And he quarantined for 2 weeks, but he never tested positive for us. He was lucky he got out of that place. But he traveled to China. Some days, he told me what city was in. He said, all of them are big. He said, some days, he said, you could look out your hotel room window, and he said, you couldn't see 400 feet in front of you. There was so much smog. And he said, other days, he said, there'd be a lake out there, and you could see the lake. But he said, that's some of, he said, they have got some of the worst smog in the world. They'll never advertise it. It's that nasty. But he said, that ain't no place to live for most people. He said, it's just, you got the rich, and you got everybody else, basically the ones that run the party, and that's it. The rest of the people don't have any money at all, and living at the poverty level. But he said a lot of stuff. They said you can't. They'll have somebody watching you, or have somebody tap your phone. He said you can't. You have to be real careful about what you do when you're traveling over there. If you're doing anything to do with technology, because they'll listen in on your bug, everything you got.
Well, the United States sends all of their TV picture cubes. I don't know about these flat screens, but the old computer monitors and all, they ship them all to China. And they got them kids out there melting them down, getting the gold out of them, and I forget what that chemical is. They spray the insides of the tubes with. They got them little kids out there doing that, breathing all them toxic fumes off of that stuff. But I was stationed down in Charleston. I was down there. Thank God I wasn't there but 3 months in transit waiting on orders to go from Jungle Warfare up at Sun Valley, Rhode Island. And that smell down there, Charleston in the morning, right across the river from the base was that doggone fertilizer plant. That was the stinkingest place I ever lived in my life.
I lived up in Rock Hill. They had a boatwide, had a paper mill not too far from us. And if the wind hit right, you smell that thing. That paper mill's awful. Used to be a bunch up down in Macon, Georgia. You could tell when you was coming into Macon with your eyes closed. You smell it for miles and miles away. But, I was talking to one of my friends not long ago, as a matter of fact. He's still, I think he retires this year. He works for Mount Vernon Mills. He's a manager of a denim mill up in Tryon, Georgia, up there above Rome. And they sent him to China for something. It's been a number of years ago. And he said they were out there, they were using like that gum steamroller type stuff, you know, paving stuff to instead of cracking corn open, they were using paving stuff to crack them open. Did the same thing with some wheat out there too. He said it's the dirtiest thing you ever seen in your life. He said using heavy equipment to do what a regular machine could do. He said they had so many people there they could do it by hand. You know, to use thousands of them to do it by hand without having to use a machine. And of course, you know, they, when you got that many people involved, I guess the human life ain't worth a whole lot.
Complain about the way things are here in the United States, but I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. And I was born and raised up here at Glassy Mountain. And I swore as a kid, when I get grown, I'm leaving South Carolina. I don't want to see another mountain. But boy, in the Navy now, I'd rather go to the mountain than go to the beach. I've seen enough ocean. And here I am back. There ain't nothing like the upstate of South Carolina, Jerry.
I think we moved 8 or 9 times over the last, we've been married almost 50 years. We moved 8 or 9 times, I guess, Walt. And last time we moved back here, it's been about 26 years ago, and I'm staying put. But my wife and I both originally from Hartwell, just across the river. So this is about as close to home as we're going to get. You know, the heart was just too small. But we've been here 26 years now, I guess, and I'm staying put. But I've lived a bunch of other places over the years, in Virginia and parts of South Carolina and Georgia. And I traveled a lot, too, throughout the Southeast. And I just say to stay here as anywhere.
Tired now, 11 years. And I was a heavy equipment operator, and I worked all over the United States. I've been from South Carolina all the way to Hawaii and then to Fairbanks, Alaska. About the only state I hadn't worked in is Oregon and Washington State and Iowa and North and South Dakota. It's too cold out there for me. But, man, I love it right here where I'm at.
Both sides of my family, they're both from Western North Carolina, back since 1700 or so, I think. So we kind of been in this area a long time. My daddy always wanted to live in Florida at one time, but he wanted to live in the, back in the late 50s, we used to go down the lot, he wanted to live up in the panhandle, or actually up in northern Florida, and where he didn't have to see him or stay on the beach or anything like that. And I think he spent so much time over the years, and he was a postal carrier. He had a rural mail route. He ran for 38 or 39 years, I think. And he loved going to Florida. He'd go down there for 10 days. They'd go down there for 10 days just about every year. He said, I don't care about the barter money. I'm going. But he loved going down there. He and I used to love fishing together down on the Space Coast and fish for Pompano and whiting and that sort of stuff. But we always had a good time when we went down there, but he never moved down there. I expected him to move down there one time, but he said, "No, he's staying put." He said he didn't like to. I said, "You stay someplace down there a few weeks." He says, "Fishing during a bad stretch of bad weather." I said, "It ain't as good as it sounds like it is."
Ex-wife and I split up. My brother lived down in Bradenton in Sarasota. And I packed, I had a 78 Trans Am, that Bandit Special. It was about this time of year. I went out there and took the T-tops out and loaded all my clothes and my ham gear, and I hit 85. I got down there, about living down there, you can't find a job paying much above minimum wage. And you better hope none of the Haitians or the Cubans come on the job, because you might be making $18 an hour and it'd be 8 or 10 of them come up together and they could hire them all in and pay them a group $18 an hour. And they'd let you go in a heartbeat. But I enjoyed the fishing and everything down there. I stayed down there 2 years, and my daughter, she came down to visit, and the people that brought her down ended up bringing their grandparents back up to Greenville, and she didn't have a ride, so I took a couple of days off work, moved her back up here, and never went back. Left all my tools, my furniture, everything. I just never closed. I just never went back. And I ain't regretted it a bit, Jerry.
You fit what my daddy used to say. He says they moved and left no address. that's pretty good. But I always... I never been there. My daughter and son-in-law, they both love going down to the beach for a short period of time and that sort of thing. I said, you have to deal with the bad weather down there, and I live down in Southwest Georgia, and you can go to Panama City about an hour from where I was, an hour and a half, and I got my fill of it then. I never ever cared that much. I like to fish down there, but I never cared that much about the beach. Don't play golf anymore. But one good thing about Florida, though, is we took the grandkids down there about 5 or 6 years ago. And they were a little bit young to go to Disney World, but they still enjoyed the heck out of it. And I'd like to take them again sometime before they get too old. But it's so dang expensive to take them down there. And I don't like to drive, and I'd have to fly. And I got an 8 flying right now. I don't think maybe next year, but we'd like to take them one more time before we're too old to go. But other than that, I just ain't lost anything down there. We used to go down to the Georgia-Florida game in Jacksonville every year. We did that for years. And, of course, that's really, Jacksonville, it's not like being in Florida itself, but we enjoyed that. That was always, Halloween, November 1st, October 30th, 31st. That was a good time of year to be down there. When the hurricanes, washed you away, and the weather was usually pretty good. But again, I ain't lost much down there. It's one of those things that sounds good, but I don't know if I want to spend 10 or 15 years down there.
Yeah, they sent me out, my crew out to Anna Maria Island. That was right out of Bradenton. They sent us out there to clear these lots for a subdivision. And we got out there and went unloading equipment. Looked around, I said, what in the world? It was a nudist beach. We worked down there. It took us about 2 months to do a 2 weeks job down there, Jerry.
Enjoying in with them, did you?
I was always kind of shy, but I sure done my part of looking.
in that excavator while you ain't got no clothes on, I guess. But Walt, you've had a good life, buddy. I'm telling you what, every time I listen to you, I hear another story I hadn't heard before. And I had a good friend of mine, he even sounded like it was the same way. He'd been all over the place. He told me, I said, well, can you tell me something you hadn't done? He said, I'll tell you one thing I did do one time. He said, I never did like doing it. He said, but it was a job for a while. He worked in a carnival as a carny for a while, and he learned all the tricks and all those games. Every time a fair comes through town, he'd take me and my son down to the fair and show us how to beat them. He was a trip, though. He was a really good fella. He's a fella got me started ham radio. He's been long gone now, but he was a good soul. He was as funny as the day is long, though.
Had any desire to join the carnival, but I enjoyed going to the fair back when I was a kid, but I don't even enjoy going to them now. I don't even fool with them. I still like going to dirt tracks, though.
Did you see that thing this past weekend? This past week they called a dirt track?
This races I've saw NASCAR put on in years. The I say I'm retired, but there's my boss man, he bought Harris Speedway up there. Well, he managed it for a while. He did have Riverside up here at Glassy Mountain, and no matter where I was at or how far behind I was, Friday at 12 o'clock, they was out there loading me up, taking me to the racetrack to get the track ready for the race. But him and his daddy own Fountain Inn Raceway, and what was that other one? There was another down that toward Woodruff, Confederate Motor Speedway. They owned it. And then Scott, now he owns Cherokee Speedway over here at Gaffney. And I don't care if I got 20 or 30 people. If they want to go to the race, we go to the race. We get into the infield, everything, and it's free.
I know me and you talked about it one time before, but I wish NASCAR would open and let them open back up North Wilkesboro and turn it into a dirt track. Let them run the car, let them run cup car, well, not cup, whatever they are now. I always call them cup cars, but yeah, I guess I always will, but that'd be a nice little track to run on for. Yeah, it's not that big, and of course it don't hold enough people to suit NASCAR there, I guess, Walt. I think it'll maybe 40,000 when it was still open.
We'll forget the first time I met Richard Petty. We, as about six of us, went up to North Wilkesboro the night before the race, and we had stopped at a 7-Eleven or something and was in there buying beer, and Richard Petty and part of his crew come in there, and one of us recognized him, and we got to talking, and we ended up out there in the parking lot with him for a couple of hours and got drunk as a skunk with him.
Go to Atlanta and run into the same thing. We had, I can't think of the guy's name now, but you know who I'm talking about. He was from, oh gosh, he was from somewhere up in the Midwest, and he was an older guy. He wasn't a young racer, but he's the one that wore wingtip shoes when he raced. And we had two or three rooms there at one of the hotels in Atlanta. He needs one of our rooms, and he's going to give us, we already have pit passes, he's going to give us more pit passes to the race if we wanted to, just to let him use our, let him take our room. I said, shoot, chill with him. And I tell you what, they gave us some kind of special passes that we got down there. We had the biggest time in the world, and they had these tents down there, and where only certain people could get in, like these VIP tents, and whew. Talking about it took us a long time to get out. I'm telling you what, because none of us were fit to drive that day. But I can't remember. I want to say his name. The first name was Dave something. But I cannot think of his last name to save my life now.
of him, but I can't think of his name. You're talking about Bristol last week. It's been about 10 or 12 years ago. Me and a friend of mine, Jim Stevens, went to Bristol for the spring race. And we had a tent down there in the infield. We got up the next morning. There was about 4 inches of snow on the ground. Man, we didn't drink much beer that day. It was so cold you couldn't drink beer.
This, you know, before they expanded, it wasn't up in concrete. You sit on concrete bleachers up there. And the first time I went, I think it might have hold 50 or 60,000. First time I went, we got up there, and one of my buddies from Charlotte and I went down there, and we went in there, and I said, "Good Lord of mercy!" I said, "That thing, what it was just that first race, and I swear to goodness, lost on one side, it was hot, you couldn't sit your bed on the other side, you freeze to death in the shade." And it was, and one time went up, it was covered, that time it was hot, it was like you have to wear coveralls on one side of the racetrack, and on the other side you could wear shorts. But I think it might only held maybe 60,000 or something like that, but it wasn't any, and then when they expanded it, a guy from DuPont gave us DuPont, and then when I was working in the mill, the guy from DuPont gave us some tickets for one of those night races, and I swear to you, it took us 6 or 7 hours to get out of that place. I mean, it was 150,000 people there, I guess, that time. I thought we just going to have to get on the side of the road, and it started pouring down rain. We like not ever got out of that parking lot and got home. It was awful.
Come to Talladega.
To go one time, I ain't never been. The fellas I was going to go with, what they had done, they rented a gutted motor home. It was about like a big, panel van. They'd rented a gutted mobile home and was headed down there. His two brothers, both of them from Gaffney. And both of them were good fellas, but they went down with two other guys. Those two guys, they were wild. And one of the brothers was, then of course they were drinking. This has been 25 years ago, I guess. Well, one of the brothers, he couldn't hold his beer very well at all. And he was on the way down there. And that night, they got down there, camping out. And of course, you know all the stuff that goes on in Talladega. And they had the mud pits standing. People had the trucks standing there jumping them holes and stuff. And his brother bought a little 25 automatic with him. And he kept saying, "Donnie, said, leave that gun alone." He said, "You can wind up shooting yourself." And he said, "They were over there sitting in a lawn chair, and he's digging, and heard someone go pop, and his brother shot himself in the knee with that thing." And luckily, there were a couple of gals there that were nurses, and it hadn't gone, it just kind of skinned off the top of the cap. And one of those nurses put some Listerine or something on him and tacked him up. He went on about his business. I don't know whether he went to the doctor or not. They told me some stories down there. I'm glad I wasn't able to go, because there's one, they still ain't in jail down there now.
Went down there. It took us a little over 11 hours to get away from the track, Jerry. There ain't no way I'd go back down there unless I flew down there and got somebody to take me into the track in a helicopter. There ain't no way I'd put up with that traffic. Did you know they were, Bill France was originally going to build that track in Greenville, that Donaldson Center, and Southern Baptist refused to let him build it there because he was wanting to sell beer on Sunday.
Dad, I don't remember when. It's been years ago. I don't remember when I read that. I read it, or somebody inside knew what was going on told me about that. But a lot of places, they just didn't want the tracks around back in those days. But Charlotte, last time I went to Charlotte, it was about as bad getting in and out. We used to have a good spot. We parked in Charlotte, and we had a little guy up there we knew, and he had a golf cart. We'd pay him $20. He'd come down to the car and pick us up. He'd pick us and our beer up, and then he'd meet us at the track. You know, after the race, we'd drive right down there, and we'd beat everybody out and head on out. But we'd have to park a mile and a half, more away from the track. Same thing at Darlington. They had a had a friend of mine. I was living in Charlotte. Had a friend of mine had a. He had somebody he knew down in Darlington. Let us park in his yard. And it wasn't far from the track. We could walk from the track and get in there and get out of all that traffic. But Atlanta and Charlotte both now. Last time in Atlanta, I said I ain't never going back. Last time I went to Charlotte, same thing. I said I ain't never going back again. Of course, somebody called me up tomorrow. Said they'd pick me up in a helicopter and take me. I'd probably get walk.
And you're talking about this. And I know tomorrow they're going to race at Gaffney. I may go up there and tell my daughter, go ahead and call Scott and tell him that I'll give him a call when we get to the gate tomorrow.
A lot of folks are supposed to be pretty nice tomorrow. I think next week's going to be real nice. We got our kids and grandkids go ahead to the beach on Sunday, so we're going to do our Easter dinner tomorrow. My granddaughter's birthday is on Tuesday, so we're going to do a little birthday celebration too tomorrow. Tell you what, it won't be long, it'll be warm enough. I might just jump in the car and head up there with you someday. I've just been so long since I've been to one, I wouldn't know what to do. I don't guess, well, I always love going to them, babe.
Scott Childress's guy I'm talking about is daddy on Childress grading and hauling. I worked for him for about 25 years. Then his daddy died and Scott merged with Raby Construction, and he's something like the senior vice president or something over Raby now. But that racing is in his blood. I remember when he was driving, he had to have the best car. And he, on the dirt track now, back then, the most you was going to win was $100 or maybe $150 or $200. And he always had to have chrome wheels on his car. He paid more for the wheels than he could win if he won the race. And we had a big mountain of them magnesium wheels out there that was all warped up and all. And this buddy of mine, where everybody partied out there in the evening when they got off of work, we was out there picking beer cans up, going to sell them. And I said, "Big, reckon what they'll pay for them old wheels." He said, "Throw something on here and we'll see." We got over there, that scrapyard paid $12 a piece for them old wheels. We cleaned up around the shop that weekend.
Seems to be worth now. Oh, me. Well, listen, Walt, I got to run back downstairs. I wanted to holler out and glad I got to talk to you a little while. Hopefully your radio's going to be there in a little bit if it ain't already sitting out there waiting on you. But great talking to you again. Take care of yourself and hope you get on the air for where the contest starts. We'll holler at you later. K4OIM, N4DJC, clear after you, Walt.
N4DJC, yeah, that radio ain't here. That little four-year-old grandson would have already been down here. Papa. Yeah, it's been good talking to you, Jerry. M4IC, K4OIM. 73, Jerry. M4D. Oh, I got it right.